networks are laid out. You have lots of users in a cell. So what if you could take that cell and make it into smaller cells, called cell splitting? Okay, so if you can have smaller cells, then you can, and what if at the same time you can have the same capacity that you get in a larger cell in each of those small cells? Then you have effectively increased the total network capacity. Okay, so it's not as easy as it sounds, obviously, but that is the, if you could enable that, then you could get closer to what you're trying to do. So, you know, just as a very simple calculation, what you're looking at network capacity is the cell density, as in how many cells can you have in a given given area, times the amount of spectrum you have, times the capacity of one, which is bits per second per hertz, times the number of users, and this is the new thing I'm adding, number of users that can simultaneously use a particular frequency channel in a cell, in one cell. So if you multiply all these numbers, that's where you get the total network capacity. So where where we at Talana is working on is increasing this, the last quantity, the number of simultaneous users. And this is a pretty hard problem, because what I'm talking about is not just single user using a frequency band, but we want to have multiple users on the same frequency band at the same time. It's not dividing them and separating them in time or frequency, but at the same time we want to use have multiple users, and that is done using what we call a spatial processing, and I'll get into that later. And the second is, can we enable lots of small cells? Can we split the cell smaller and smaller? So the main thing here, and you might see this already, is that when you have smaller and smaller cells, these cells will now start to interfere with each other. Right? So if there is a phone, the user, this laptop here, right here, is not only going to see energy from this guy, this tower here, but also from this tower here. As the cells get smaller, the area of reception or the range of reception of any of these laptops here will become bigger and bigger. So more and more base stations will come into its circle of coverage, you could say, or circle of reception. So that is going to become a challenge. Of course, one of the ways people solve this is use multiple frequencies. Okay, so they will. So here, all these cells are blue color, right? So what I'm trying to show is they use the same frequency band. Because you could, if you have lots of frequency channels, you could use different ones, right? So each of these neighboring cells, you could make sure that they are using a different frequency band, and that you could solve it that way. But we already kind of accept that that's a challenge. We don't have that many frequency bands available. We really want to reuse all of these things as much as possible. Any questions? You are increasing capital investment, that is correct, but what you are able to do is serve many more users, right? So you will not, it's a great question, but the idea is that you will not do that right from the beginning. Okay? So the idea is to enable something which can scale from something that looks like this to this as the number of users increase, without losing in the performance that a particular user gets. Right? So what happens in this model is that if you have a few users, then you take the capacity of the cell is a constant number, let's say 1 gigabit. If you have a few number of users to start off with, you will divide the capacity among them. As the number of users increase, then each of them will see a lower and lower throughput to them. Right? This is kind of what happened with the Jio network, if people are familiar with it. Initially, there were very few users, so you got very high speeds. The capacity of the network was the same, but as there were more users, you just had to divide it among the number of users. Right? So you will not do this right from the beginning. You'll only do this as and when needed, so that you can continue splitting the network and handle the more number of users without affecting the performance seen by a single user. But what you want to be able to do from a technology point of view, that enable this to happen seamlessly. If you don't have techniques to handle interference, then when you go from here to here, this will break down. That is an important part. Okay, so I mean, this is, I'm just showing you what we have achieved by using our technology, because we do, I was going to show this in the end, but these are the devices that we make. So these are the base stations. So this is the network where we set up four of these base stations, and we have 12 different clients all surrounding here. So the key thing here is that they are all using the same 20 megahertz channel. They are simultaneously operating, and to measure the, this is the actual measurement, we get about 2 gigabits. So the ratio here is 100 bits per second. So this is kind of a evidence of showing that you can actually achieve what we are claiming in a real life situation. This was done in the Mountain View, and the ranges of the links are anywhere between 200 meters and 2 kilometers. So it's all over the place. So this is a real life non-line of sight type of situation. Sorry, in Mountain View, in California. Of the 5 gigahertz. This is actually at 3.6, which is an open band in the US. So it's from 3.65 to 3.67. That's correct. So the message here, I would say, is a single, the same 20 megahertz is used by all the devices here, and we are still able to operate it and sum up the total numbers to 2. And if you, each of these is actually supposed to get 200. As a peak capacity, you can see that when you have 12 of them, you're not getting 2400, you're just getting 2. So there is some loss there. Yes. That's a good question. It is not supposed to. Otherwise, there is some variation of 5% up and down. You can see this graph is actually over time. You can see this is the amount of variation you see. This is maybe about 10 minutes. This is the length of the experiment. But the idea would be for it to be pretty stable. Of course, things will change in the future as and when new users come into the network or these guys move, right? So if you turn off one of them or add a new one, then they will change. But it is supposed to be adaptable. How does this number compare with other things? So we already looked at the graph. LTE has big numbers, but in average, the numbers are pretty low. There are efforts going on otherwise in research and all, and there have been some labs that have shown equal numbers or higher numbers actually, but I would say that we are the only commercial product in the market which actually can get 105. So now we'll get into the how we do some of these things, and then take questions based on that. So I mentioned some of these things already, so we'll go directly to that. So first is the question of when you have all these real-life situation, you don't have line of sight, which is kind of obvious from what it, that is called N loss is non-line of sight, that's the industry terminology. So you don't have line of sight, so here for example, this is a real link that we actually tried in Manhattan. So this is one end is on the top of a tall building and the other one is on the ground here. So obviously there is no way you can see it from one end to the other. This what these lines here are actually the results of a ray tracing tool that actually traces how the wireless signal can go from one to the other side. And you can only see here is that there's no, obviously there's no line of sight path, but it's not that there are only two or three ways for the ray to be traced here. There are in fact maybe hundreds of different paths that the signal can actually take. Each of the paths has multiple reflections, right? So something like this is reflecting off here and coming here straight, but something going over here probably has multiple reflections, and each of the paths is coming at a different delay because the path is different, right? And the attenuation, as in the strength of the signal, is also different. So that's all that causes problems. And related to this problem is the fact that you also don't want to know, there's no way you can align it to this. You can't see the other end from here, right? So typically in this line of sight, the way this is deployed or installed. Familiar, if you look at any of the towers, you have big dish antennas, right, which are these parabolic dishes. So the, whoever is installing them actually has to climb it and precisely align it using wrenches and such things, and or using laser pointers. And once it is aligned, you don't want to move it. You tighten it and that's it. If it moves by half a degree, then you are done for. It will go outside its beam. The beam widths are usually 1 degree, 2 degrees, or sometimes even smaller than that. So what you don't want to have is that constraint in this type of thing. Cannot afford to align it that precisely. So just to take a step back, I just want to show the principle of beam steering or beam forming. Some of you might be familiar with that. And the idea is that how can you do this alignment without physically moving the antenna? Okay, that's the main question. And this is not a new principle; it's an old principle, and we are of course using it very extensively there. used in many different applications, including radio astronomy and so on, where they want to align or point to a particular region in the sky. This is how they do it without physically moving the antenna. So what you do is you don't have a single antenna, you have multiple antennas. That is the key principle here. It's called an antenna array. And so here is RF signal is the radio signal. So if you have an antenna array, this is the basic. If you don't do anything about it, what it will do is they will all transmit the same signal. You're spreading it, and the wavefront will go straight in front. Right? So it will be parallel or perpendicular to the array itself. That will be the direction of the RF wavefront. So the question is, how do you change the direction of the wavefront? So if you can do that, then you don't have to physically move the antenna anymore. You can just you'll be able to do it electronically. Right? So the very simple way to imagine this to implement this is to introduce delay elements in this whole path. Right? So instead of having them at zero delay, you have different delays for all of these, and then the wavefront will move in a different direction. So this is a very very basic principle behind beamforming. And this is used not only in radio waves, it's also used in sound and directional microphones. They all use very very similar principles. So of course real life is complicated in many different ways. First of all, when you're doing this, you are only sending the signal in one direction. Sometimes if you have a non-line of sight type of environment, you want to use all the reflections. You can't just send all your signal in one direction. You want to actually split it into multiple directions. So that makes programming these more difficult. Secondly, the reflection that is there is not going to be, there is a variation in the frequency itself. As in, throughout your band, your 20 megahertz band, the behavior of the environment is not going to remain the same. So that's called frequency variation or frequency fading. A reflection which might go in a particular direction for say the lower end of the band, 3.6 gigahertz, will be very different at the higher end of the band, at 3.8 gigahertz. So you really have to, you cannot fix this for the whole band at once. So you have to perform this operation differently at each slice of the frequency band. So you really do this in frequency domain, you don't do this in time domain. This is if you see this here, what you're doing is these are time delay elements. And this works as a very simple beamformer, but for our purposes, you cannot have a time delay based beamformer. You need to have something which works in the frequency domain. Most of you are familiar with running FFTs and doing that. So this is the end result of that. When you have two systems, what we call as a CN and the EN, concentrator and the anode, they are both beamforming. So this is a key element here. The beamforming happening at both ends of the link. And this is very important so that you can get a much higher quality signal between them. So this is one difference between what we do and what say the 4G technologies have, because they have a lot of sophistication on the base station side, but they cannot afford to put that on the phone. The phone is such a small device. So this is one difference we have, and this will become more apparent. So the other thing to note here is that because these two are beamforming towards each other, there is some what really happens in practice is there is some kind of convergence. They are continuously aligning to each other. So when you start off, there is no beam because you don't know where the other side is, right? So when you start off, this CN is just going to transmit a omnidirectional, what we call as an isotropic transmission. It's going to send the signal everywhere. Okay, and then the first time it sends it, the EN will get a very low quality signal. It's going to receive something, and then it'll be able to estimate the rough direction of the CN, and it'll send the signal back, the beam back towards the CN. Right? Next time the CN receives the same the EN signal, it has a much better idea of where the EN is. So it's going to redirect its beam and form a beam which is sharper or narrower, you could say, towards. So this happens very fast. It happens in a few different exchanges. But once that happens, it is settled. So then after that, they continuously adapt. Part of how the initial setup happens. So what I showed here again was about a single beam, right? And like I mentioned before, or when you're in a real life situation, the behavior of the environment is not constant across the whole frequency band. So this is what is this picture is trying to show that. Okay? So what we're trying to on the x-axis is the spectrum. So this is frequency. So this is the lower end of the 20 megahertz. This is the higher end of the 20 megahertz. Let's say. So what you're seeing here in the black graph is the combined signal that you're receiving if you don't do any beamforming. Okay, so and this is the typical pattern that is seen. When you have two paths of different delays, when you combine them, because they are different different frequencies, you will see this this typical pattern. This is simple mathematical result of that. So, and that is not great because what happens if you're trying to send data across this, then at some parts of the frequency band you're getting higher signal, and other parts you're not. So, what you want to do is actually make them pretty equalize them all. That's called equalization. So after you do that, you get a much higher, the orange signal is what we are able to do. So you're able to get a 30 dB increase in that after you combine them coherently, sort of just using a summation across all the antennas. This is a different way of looking at it. This is a different way of looking at it and also showing a different problem. So the fact is that in an environment, not only variation across frequency, there's also variation in time. So this is what it's showing, that if you have a single single antenna, then you see this amount of variation, as in dBs it could be about 30 dB. The reason is that the two paths that you have, let's say you have two reflections from one point to the other point, they could constructively combine or destructively combine, right? The whether it's one or the other really depends on the exact path difference between them. And if it changes by the half the wavelength of radio waves, which is about in our case say a few centimeters, right? A few centimeters is not a lot. If you change any position of reflector by a few centimeters, then they might go from one kind of combination to the completely the other kind, where you'll get no signal at all. So this is kind of what happens in real life, and what you might have seen in practice with your phones also, right? Sometimes you move a few meters away or a few centimeters away, and you get a much better signal. And that why? Because the multipath combination at the new spot is so much better than the other one, which is just a few centimeters away. Because that is in the order of the wavelength of the radio waves that we are considering. So that is called the time variation or the time based fading model that we suffer from. And a simple way to alleviate that, or at least imagine how it is done, is that if you have multiple antennas, each of the antennas, and if you have enough spatial diversity between them, which will be few centimeters apart, which is roughly in the order of magnitude of the wavelength of the radio waves, then you would get dramatic improvement, because you're going to have a lot of diversity among them. So even if one antenna is experiencing destructive interference, the other ones would not. And so what happens when you combine them? Then you get a pretty flat signal. So that's the idea. Type of equalization. Much more of that. So these are curves which are drawn to illustrate this in a different fashion. So what you have on the y-axis, and this is in 10 to the minus 1, minus 2, is the error rate that you see on a particular link. These curves are showing as the signal increases, how does the error rate decrease? So what you want to see here is that you want to get the lowest error rate with as little signal as you want here. And this is showing the ability of when you have lots of antennas, and this curve here is the maximum number of antennas. When you have a lot of antennas, you can get to a lower error rate pretty fast. You don't need a lot of power to get to a lower error rate. That is because of the diversity that you get from having lots of antennas, so that at least some of them will be in a good situation. Other ones, even if some of them are in a bad situation. The system has a fixed number of antennas, but the fixed number of antennas, but it's a good question. How do you decide how many, right? So there are various factors. Any kind of commercial technology, cost is the most important thing. As you put the more more number of antennas, the cost increases. Also, the signal processing that is done here is scales with the number of antennas. In fact, it scales as a cubic factor. So if you have twice the number of antennas, you are going to do 8 times more processing. So you really don't want to do that. So you have just enough so that you can achieve your goals, but no more than that. Okay, so the second, so we talked about non-line of sight communication and alignment. The second feature that we have is the ability to use the same frequency again and again for multiple links. And this is a very important advance that we have made, which is not really done in any wireless technology today. And this is again very important to repeat, is because you want to use the same frequency throughout the network as much as possible without having to acquire more frequency bands. I'll skip this, but I'll show how that kind of that works. So this is the picture I showed you before, where you're trying to have a beam towards a particular end node that you're talking about. Okay? So the thing I wanted to show, the new thing I want to show here is that it's not just the question of a beam. A beam is formed when you try to combine your antennas so that the signal is maximized in a given direction. What you get at the same time with the beam is what we call as a null. Okay, so null is basically a location in the antenna pattern where you're minimizing the signal going that is being transmitted. At the same time, this is a very reciprocal system, so you're also minimizing the signal that is being received at the same time. So the main thing to see here is the null is almost as important, even more important than the beam, in a situation where you have a lot of interference, right? So when you have a lot of interference, what you are trying to receive, you want to not only maximize the energy coming from a given direction, but you also want to minimize the energy coming from undesired directions. Because if you can do that, then the signal, the ratio between the signal and the noise will be maximized. Okay? So noise or the interference. So that is how that is the important metric in wireless systems. It's not just the strength of the signal, but the ratio between the signal and the interference. That's why if you have heard the term SINR, that is signal to interference ratio. The ratio is very important. So the nulls are very important, and I'll show you why in the next slide. So this is where the idea comes in. Where how do we have more than one clients operating on the same frequency or more multiple of these clients operating on the same frequency? And here is how it kind of works. I'll give you some idea. So you have two links here. One is the pink one and the blue one. So EN1 is talking to CN using the pink in a pink beam. So EN is transmitting the pink beam and CN is receiving it. And the other thing is happening on the blue one. So if you consider when the blue beam is being received, what the CN has to do is not only does it have to receive the maximize the signal reception from EN2, but at the same time it has to create a null towards EN1 so that it minimizes signal coming from EN1. This is happening simultaneously with the other guy also. So when the CN is trying to receive a signal from EN1, it's also trying to create a null towards the EN2. So if you can simultaneously do this at the CN for both the beams, then you can actually receive from both of these guys at the same time at the same frequency. So that is the goal of it, and this is where I'll not get into how the signal processing is able to achieve this. But if you can achieve it, then you can. You are effectively multiplying the frequency availability, where you can use the same frequency band twice. And you can do it more than twice, and that's where what we call as spectrum multiplication. You can do it again and again. So that's the idea which is being shown here, where and this goes back to, if you are familiar with how other wireless technologies work, like say Wi-Fi. When you have lots of users in a given room, they distribute the wireless transmission opportunities or the wireless channel in time. And what that means is that when there are multiple people trying to talk, only one can actually send its data at a given time point in time. So the other people have to wait. They have a mechanism so that they take turns, and that is called TDMA or time division multiple access. The other method that is used by LTE and GSM is FDMA or frequency division multiple access, where you take the big frequency band and divide it into small chunks, like 1 megahertz chunk, and then each of them uses it. So what we are trying to do is, we are trying to multiply this in space. So it's not time and frequency, but we call it spatial multiplexing, where you can get real benefit out of it. Because when you do in these first two techniques, the total capacity doesn't increase. The total capacity remains the same. You're just having, there are just two different methods of actually dividing it among people. You're not actually multiplying it. This is what we are able to do because of our techniques that I mentioned. I'll briefly talk about this slide. So I mentioned this before, was the problem of the peak versus average capacity that you get in a wireless network. And I briefly mentioned, but the main reason is that, consider there are three cells with three base stations, right? And there are users distributed all over. Now, if you have a user which is right next to a tower, then that user is going to get great performance because it is close to its closest tower. But if you have a user which is at the edge, which is the middle in between two, then that user is going to suffer a lot, not just because it's far away from its base tower, but also because it's going to receive almost the same signal from neighboring tower also. It's in the middle. So then that is called the cell edge problem, and that is very difficult to handle in today's technologies. And this is where we are better, because we talked about, since our devices have beamforming on the edge devices also, the client devices also, they will be able to point to the tower they are interested in and ignore the interference coming from the other tower. So that is kind of the benefit that we derive. And this is where this graph, I won't go into detail, but just trying to compare LTE versus Tarana systems. In LTE systems, you can see these different colors. What they are showing is, at the edge of the cell, which is this pink color, the SINR or the capacity is very low. If you are close to the tower, you get very high performance, otherwise you are very low at the edge. So this is what we are able to elevate this in the Tarana system, and it's almost, you can get almost the same throughput all throughout. You don't have to actually be close to the tower. So next issue, and I mentioned that before, was the fact that we get unlicensed interference, which is Wi-Fi interference. And I won't really get into how we deal with it. I'll just show what is the result of that, or what is the result of the fact that one, if you have this technique. So this is I'll briefly explain what this diagram is. This might be important. So this is called a constellation diagram, which is trying to show when you receive data from in a wireless link from the other side, when you try to resolve the different data points that are being sent, or the bits and bytes, then it can be plotted on this 2D graph. And if you, without getting into the detail, what you're trying to see is that if all the points are easily distinguishable, then you can decode the data with very little error. If the points start to mix with each other, then you are not able to resolve them in between each other, and then that's how you get more and more errors. So what we have shown, and actually the video might be a better way to do this, is that even if you get Wi-Fi interference, which doesn't belong to Tarana devices, which is even stronger than our signal, we are still able to remove it in real time. And that is the hard part, because we have to be able to remove this interference as and when it arrives. So Wi-Fi devices are not within our control, and we are able to get a constellation which is almost as good as if there was no interference. So that is and the and I think this point I mentioned before is the fact that any kind of variation in the channel happens continuously from all these kind of sources. There are, in a real life world, you have traffic, and you have trees moving, and so what this means is that your system needs to adapt to all these conditions very fast. So you can't just train this system, as we were showing earlier, in terms of the beam patterns once, and then assume that everything is going to work. In fact, in our system, we are having to do this every 5 milliseconds. That's how fast you need to be able to change and continuously adapt. So I think this is just to summarize all the different techniques we have, and I will put what we have shown. So a few different places where we are actually able to show this technology in action. So one is, this is in Manhattan, I mentioned that before, where we, this is in fact in some sense the most difficult environment, because all you have is big buildings, you never have line of sight. However, in our case, this happens to be a good thing, because you have a lot of reflectors, a lot of glass and steel. So more reflectors you have in the environment, we are able to actually capture that, recover the radio signal which is there, and combine it effectively using our signal processing. So this actually was a great environment. We are able to show that anywhere within 2 kilometers, which is a pretty significant distance, we are able to almost get the maximum, the full range. This is what is happening. In fact, the way we did it was, we just took a van. We set up one end was fixed on the building, the other one was just put up a van like this, and we just drove around. And the idea was to show this to, this was with Verizon, an operator in the US, to show them that it takes very little time to set up a link. So as, you know, wherever we would go, we would stop for a few minutes and the link would be set up and we would take some measurements. That is very important for in real life for these guys, because when they send out a technician out in the field to set up this network, they don't want to spend a lot of time. If they need half an hour to align an antenna, from an economic point of view, it's a bad idea, because you have to stop the traffic, you have to get permission and so on. If you can do it within 5 minutes, just hook up the radio, then it's a great advantage for them. This is an interesting experiment I'll talk about it very briefly. Is where this is actually in Berkeley, right, in our UC Berkeley campus, where we set up a link from the campus here to the edge of the sea, to the edge of the sea, to the bay, and this is about 4 kilometers, 3.4 miles. That's how far the link is. So the idea was, and you can see it here. Okay, so where this antenna is pointing, you can see it's pointing towards the sea. In fact, right. So if you go back here, it's pointing towards this direction out there, right? And this is where However, it still works. It works as in the link is still formed. So now you would wonder what is happening. If the antenna is radiating in this direction, then how is it ever coming back here? Right? And the little trick is that there is this parking sign in front. Okay, so that is it. So it is reflecting off this. So even a small reflector like this is actually sufficient to help us form this link. So this kind of shows you the power of radio waves and this is a trial that we did in Netherlands, where we set up one of our radios on this boat. They apparently had some kind of sailing event where they needed to provide connectivity to people who were in the water. So they wanted to set up a base station. So we were able to provide a link from the boat to the ground. And of course, the point here was that this would move continuously. There would be no way to align it in a fixed fashion. So our system was able to. So briefly about Tarana, I won't spend that much time. We started this company in 2009 along with my co-founders, and it was based on some ideas that we had in our PhD program, but although what we're doing now is completely different. So we evolved to doing very different things now, and now we have set up in Pune as well. So you know, part of the reason I'm talking about this is that yes, if any of you are interested, or you know people who are interested in working with us, you're welcome to talk to me. We work on all kinds of, you can imagine, all kinds of software, signal processing, wireless, the whole device consists of a lot of different elements. It's a good question. So power is typically regulated by the country you are in. So it has to pass that, right? So it cannot be more than what, say, for example, the Wi-Fi devices that it actually. So it's if you want to interest in the actual range, it's in about a watt or 2 watts. That's the power we're talking about. But however, it's the key, the important thing here is that if you transfer it equally omnidirectionally in every direction, then you don't get much out of it. So when you try to beamform it in a given direction, the effective radiated power can go up to 30 dB more than that. So that's a big increase. So effectively, it could be 100 watts in that particular direction. So this technology actually have a picture here, right? So this is how NVGen could be deployed. Put up the base station on a traffic or pole like this, and then you would put the clients on your home. Right. So that's the typical deployment. This will be fixed deployment. So instead of having your say BSNL modem at your home, you would use one of our devices. Right. So it's not directly meant for hand devices, but your hand devices can now talk to this one to this device here, and use this as a relay to talk to the internet. In the future, we might consider taking a version of our technology, putting into hand devices, but that is a pretty challenging problem. And it is dominated by guys who do this, like millions and millions of devices. Right? Not for small companies to enter. So in this, it's a good question. So in the next product that we are working on, this is for this market, where you have a CN like this, that is going to serve about 2,000 users. And the total capacity will be about 6 gigabits for the whole CN. So if you take an average, it's still high, but the idea is that each of the users should be able to peak up to a gigabit. Exactly. You can locally use an access point inside your house or a switch or whichever wells to distribute it. So this is how it would look like. Just kind of similar to your satellite dish installation, which is outside your house. But it's in fact even smaller than that and doesn't need any alignment. Even the satellite dish, the guy has to come and align it to the satellite. Right? You don't need to do that. But you would in a neighborhood. This works more for the US, where you have a lot of suburban areas and single unit houses. Something similar would work in India, where you would connect a building with one of our clients. And then within the building, you don't need wireless anymore. You could have a lot of buildings already come with a wired internet network. So you could use that to distribute. Either a residential building or a company. If you have a company or an institution like KFR, you would connect it to your LAN network. Across the different kinds of capsules or over time? Oh yeah. No, it is definitely varies. Yeah. So if in fact, some of them are very interesting characteristics. So if you're reflecting over water, there's also a phase reversal that happens, not just reflection. So you also have to be careful about that. But ground reflection also, I think, has a phase reversal for one of the polarizations. So we're talking about the signal actually is vertically and horizontally dual polarized. So one of them has a phase reversal, the other one doesn't. So you also have to handle that type of thing. But yes, I think every material has a different kind of reflection. Even I'm not aware of that. And there's absorption. If you have a tree, then there's a lot of absorption to the foliage as well. So I was saying that with more users, you can do splitting of the cells. So it won't increase if you don't do anything about it. You will increase the number of cells, but the important thing to ensure would be while you're increasing the number of cells, you don't want to suffer any degradation of the capacity of a single cell itself. So if you do it without our kind of cancellation techniques, then the smaller cells will start to interfere with each other. So that's, you want to avoid that from happening. So if you can do it in a fashion where it's not affected, then the scaling can happen over time based on demand. you start with a single cell, and as soon as you exceed 2000 users, you can split into two cells using the same frequency. You don't need to have a new frequency. Yes. Yes. Yeah. There's two equal paths. So the short answer is we don't know, right? Because at that point, when you look at the signal processing, we don't really care in some sense, because you basically try to estimate the channel matrix based on you send a training symbol and you receive something and you try to see what's going on. Yes. Yeah. It could be either of the two. Can see. Yeah. Well, that definitely happens also, right? Yeah. Definitely happens. So I think actually most situations that will happen because of the variation in the location of the antenna itself, it won't be that. What it would mean is that the signal that is transmitted from each of the antennas would add up or not add up constructively differently. So you would have maybe signal from one antenna taking one path and the other antenna taking the other path. So that will happen. I'll speak a little about it. Yeah, so I would say, in some sense, my PhD research was unusual from that standpoint, because when I started my research, it was actually, and I liked it in that sense, was based on how can we take wireless technology as it existed, this is I'm talking about 15 years ago, and adapt it for real life use for uses which are not thought about before. This was basically rural connectivity. So that's where we started off with. So it was an effort called Technology and Infrastructure for Emerging Regions in UC Berkeley, led by my advisor. And he was really thinking about, okay, how do we take different kinds of technologies that have been developed in the US and see if it can be used for all kinds of things, for connectivity, solving connectivity problems, solving power problems. And we came up with solutions for solar chargers and so on, which could be used in things like power quality is bad. Data collection types of problems and medical e-records and so on. So there were all kinds of things we were thinking of, and connectivity was one of the things. And I was fortunate enough that we developed some ideas based on Wi-Fi technology back then, and able to set up real life links in many different places, especially in India. We mentioned Arvind Eye Hospital is a network in Tamil Nadu, and they provide eye care at very low cost or free to a lot of people, but they had an issue where they couldn't have doctors in every village. So at that point there was no LTE network or even a DSL network, so they wanted to set up these village eye centers. Let me see if I have a picture of that. Yeah, so they set up this network of eye centers in around their hospital, and they wanted to connect them together. So this was a great application for us. Okay, so we have an answer for you. We can use Wi-Fi for this, and we set up these links. And in fact, this involved, as you can see here, using towers of all kinds. So this was actually a chimney of a factory, which we just talked to the guy and said, okay, can we use your chimney to set up our antenna? So we didn't want to spend money to set up towers. So they were helpful at that point. So we set this up. So this was a great experience, because we could take something that we were using for research, write papers about it, but also put it into action and see people using it, right? So they were using it for video conferencing, and the umbrella term is telemedicine, but it was basically video and audio conferencing. That's what they were using it for. It's kind of what people used to do. So if you are in one of these centers, the doctor would sit at the hospital, but still be able to either talk to the patient or diagnose the patient as and when. So this was. So this is what we were doing. So however, we realized that this is not the best way to do it. You still needed towers, You still need to climb them. You still need to align the antenna. And sometimes we saw that we would set it up, and next year we would show up, and it wouldn't work because somebody had moved it, or there was a new building that showed up in front and it stopped working. Right. So that's where we said, can we make even better use, or can we take some newer ideas which are out there in the wireless research world and convert them into commercial technology, which would alleviate these issues of pointing and towers. So that's kind of where we started off with. Of course, we were fortunate enough to find people to support us in the beginning, because this took a while for us to even to get to a stage where we could show a prototype to people. That itself took about 3 to 4 years. So we found friendly investors who could help us doing this. So this was all in California, in and around Berkeley at that point. And right now we are at a stage where we do have production technology in production. We still have challenges in the cost of this thing. This is typically the cycle that technology companies have to follow. Initially it is expensive. Now we have a good idea of how do we reduce the cost of this. By the way, that all comes from the signal processing. I mean, there is so much processing that you need significant computing resources which are on the box itself, and that is where the challenge comes from. In fact, what we do in terms of our work is a lot of it is in optimizing it to just enough processing so we can get what we want and not do anything which is extra. So yeah. So this was you can see the labels here. These are like 10 kilometers, 12 kilometers. So these are the distances. In fact, since you ask, I will mention that we did set up a very long link. This is actually currently the world record for the longest unamplified Wi-Fi link. Just using off-the-shelf Wi-Fi devices, we set up a link. This is in Venezuela. Actually, this was about 382 kilometers. So we found two mountains, and we had to find big mountains. This was in the Andes mountains in Venezuela on the other side. So if you look at the the profile, then you can see that the curvature of the earth is it just barely crosses it, and still it's line of sight. But this was the So that's a good question. That is something we don't adapt. I mean, we don't really try to handle it. The short answer is that a lot of the bands we deal with are not affected by weather. So that's the short answer. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.